Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Dengbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, July 12, 2018. South Sudanese lawmakers vote to extend their terms in office and President Kiir's, but one lawmaker says it could be overturned by events.
Tomorrow, if we have an agreement, that will come out. They may say that that agreement is superior than the current, the one we have incorporated in the constitution. And we will have to make another procedure of amendment.
And the South Sudan government denies a UN report saying government troops committed crimes against civilians that may amount to war crimes in April and May.
It's one-sided and put all blames on the SPLA. It does not say much about the atrocities committed by the rebels.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. In a unanimous vote today, South Sudan's lawmakers voted to extend the terms in office for all officials in the Kiir administration for another 3 years. The voting was made in an extraordinary sitting convened by the Speaker of South Sudan's National Legislative Assembly. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
The Speaker hereby declare that the Transitional Constitution Amendment Bill No. 5 for the year 2018 is hereby passed by the National Legislature.
National Assembly Speaker Anthony Lino Makana announces the vote of the MPs and the bill allowing President Kiir to rule for 3 more years when the bill becomes the law of the land. Deng Xielkur, chairperson of the Legislative Committee in the Parliament, presented the bill in its second reading this morning.
To my request, the Honourable Speaker and Honourable Members, this is my motion. Take this through one day.
Kur was referring to the fact that all terms in office from the president on down were due to expire next month. After the bill's third reading, the constitutional amendment was passed into fourth stage. Justice Minister Paulino Wanawila, who introduced the bill 2 weeks ago, told the lawmakers the move is to prevent South Sudan's government from becoming illegitimate. Wanawila says today's vote is subject to reconsideration if the warring parties meeting in Khartoum reach a peace deal which could then overwrite today's vote.
Tomorrow, if we have an agreement, that will come out. They may say that that agreement is superior than the current, the one we have incorporated in the constitution. And we will have to make another procedure of amendment.
The vote allows President Salva Kiir to remain in power until 2021 and extends the mandate of the current South Sudan Transitional Government, Parliament and governors of all the 32 states for another 3 years. The lawmakers also removed the powers given to Taban Dengai as the first vice president to appoint state governors in the former Upper Nile and Unity states. Opposition party lawmakers in Juba voted in favor of the constitutional amendment. But shortly afterward, the SPLMIO, leadership led by Riek Machar, issued a statement saying it regretted what it calls the underhanded manner by which legislators at the Transitional National Assembly extended the term of the current transitional government. The statement signed by SPLMIO official Mabior Garangi Mabior says the move proves the regime is not interested in a peaceful resolution to the civil war and called it an illegal extension of the regime's tenure. Gabriel Rorich Jur is the chief whip of other opposition political parties represented in parliament.
Mr. Speaker, sir, we are moving in the right direction. Why I'm saying we are moving in the right direction is that the duration of the agreement is going to expire very soon. And if we don't do it now, the international community will learn on us that we are working illegally. So this one, I really appreciated it.
The country's warring parties failed to sign a power-sharing deal last weekend in Kampala. That proposal would have led to the dissolution of the current government and formation of a new transitional government of national unity. President Kiir is expected to sign the bill into law. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
South Sudan in Focus has learned the ongoing talks on South Sudan have been extended to July 16th. The talks have been continuing in Sudan and may be moved to Nairobi. The South Sudan Army is criticizing a UN report about human rights violations in Laer and Mayendit counties allegedly committed by government troops. On Tuesday this week, United Nations human rights monitors released a report accusing government soldiers of killing over 200 civilians and raping young women and girls. A South Sudan Army spokesman says the report is aimed at derailing efforts to end the conflict in South Sudan. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
The 17-page report accuses the South Sudan Army of killing 232 civilians, raping 120 women and girls, and abducting 130 others. It also says government troops burned villages and looted property belonging to civilians in Mayendit and Laer counties of southern Liege State between April and May. At a news conference in Juba today, South Sudan military spokesman Brigadier General Lul Rai Kong says the report has tarnished the image of the South Sudan Army.
We regret the way the National Army was portrayed as a murderous unit out there to just kill, loot, rape and destroy property. We in the SPLA reject the findings of the report on the following. It's one-sided and put all blames on the SPLA. It does not say much about the atrocities committed by the rebels in the same area.
Lul accuses the United Nations of trying to frustrate efforts to continue the peace process.
It is hell time and meant to derail the ongoing peace talks. It is intended to fan flames of hatred, inculcate and instill in Dr. Riek Machar and his forces ill feelings against the SPLA, whom enemies had falsely accused of targeting is people in Laer and Mayendit counties.
Lul says the SPLA is conducting its own investigation on what happened between April and May in Laer and Mayendit. He claims the army will punish the individuals who he says might have committed crimes in the former unity state and is calling on the Ceasefire Transitional Security Arrangement Monitoring Mechanism or CITISM to investigate violations documented by the UN Human Rights Monitors.
We are also appealing to CITISM to go on the ground and verify the information released by enemies, because the work of CITISM is to monitor, not only monitor reported violations of cessation of hostilities agreement and permanent ceasefire, no. Also even other actors, especially the enemies that has accused us, the information they have given should also be verified and validated.
Lul claims the UN is not interested in peace for South Sudan and wants what he calls a regime change. For VOA News, I'm Manyang David Mayar in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Jonglei State officials and South Sudan HIV Commission have launched an HIV awareness campaign today in Bor Town. The deputy chair of South Sudan HIV Commission, Dr. Achol Ayom, says they are doing the campaign in Bor to create awareness on how the population can protect themselves from the deadly virus. Dengai Deng has this story for VOA from Bor.
Dr. Achol Ayom, the deputy chair of South Sudan HIV Commission, says the office has launched a free HIV testing program to find and hopefully help thousands of people learn the HIV status.
We came to Bor to do some awareness and do testing, counseling and testing. Now we are at the Bor Freedom Square, and you could even hear the music around. We are doing the work. A lot of crowd came, and they are happy to be tested. So I'm so pleased that they are doing that. It's launching now, and the governor and all the ministers are around, and they are tested too.
Ayom says the test will help identify people who are HIV positive, many of whom are either unaware or ignore the fact that they have the virus that causes AIDS. She says the test will continue for 2 days at Freedom Square and will continue at Bor Town Health Facilities. Ayom says the free tests that are being done in public hospitals and the campaign has a goal of determining the HIV status of 90% of country's population by the end of 2020.
People are going to go to cattle camps, they are going to payams, they are going to see everyone, and we try to test everyone. 2020, we have to test 90% of the people. And 90% of people should know their status.
Dr. Ayom says South Sudan's HIV Commission has supplied antiretroviral drugs to Bor Hospital for the people that found with the virus. Medical researchers say the management of HIV/AIDS normally includes the use of multiple antiretroviral drugs to control HIV infection. Several classes of antiretroviral agents act on different stages of the HIV life cycle, which can prevent opportunistic infection that often lead to death. Ayom says if a person got tested and found negative, they should protect themselves and others by sharing HIV protection information. She also urges South Sudanese to stop discriminating against the people with the virus.
Can you, your own mom, can you isolate her? She needs care. She needs to be loved. She needs somebody to take care of her. And this is what we do as a community. We take care of each other. What we want from you is to love that person. We don't isolate them. It's not going to infect us by any means.
An online Healthline newsletter reports that more than 20 antiretroviral drugs are approved to treat HIV. They don't cure HIV, but they can reduce the amount of virus in the body. Ajang March, the HIV coordinator in Jonglei State Ministry of Health, says he is concerned about the high rate of HIV in Bor.
The race is going up. Why I say that, you see here, from January to June now, those who are attending the PMCT, pregnant mothers, we get some in 3,300 and something. Out of that, we get 51 positive. Imagine, and in the BCT and inside the ward, we have 162. When you see, you compare the data, those who are coming now for the testing. And the population, you know, the data are increasing. Those who are taking drug now in Bor Resort Hospital and Panyagor, we have 929. Currently, they are active on ARVs now. Yeah, the accumulative number, this is called accumulative number, we have 1,298 who are tested positive as they were enrolled in ART. But those who are active right now is 922. Out of them, we miss 342.
Mike says there are enough ARV drugs available at Bor State Hospital for the people who are HIV positive. He encourages people living with the virus to always take their ARVs to reduce the virus load and to prolong their lives. For VOA News, I am Deng Haideng in Bor.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Ugandan officials take a second look at attacks on social media. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how should children be disciplined?
For me, I believe stroking, because even the Bible says, spare the rod, you spoil the child. I think stroking in Africa is what we've all grown up being until a particular age. Past a particular age, like the teenage years into puberty, there you go to counseling and you'll really help the child.
Through listening to them, talking to them, and not caning them. If you cane them, they'll rebel.
Personally, I think we should discipline our children through counseling. You counsel them on the right ways to adopt, on the right ways to follow.
For example, if they make a mistake, you should call them. You sit with them, tell them, this is what you did is bad, by just talking to the child.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Ugandan officials say they'll rethink the country's social media tax after a massive protest yesterday that police dispersed by firing tear gas and warning shots. The situation reflects people's growing dependence on social media, not only to keep in touch with friends and family, but to stay informed on domestic developments and air grievances about their government. That has led many authoritarian leaders to try to control social media to prevent possible unrest. My colleague Paul Alexander spoke with Arnaud Froger, head of the Africa desk at Reporters Without Borders, on concerns about the impact of such efforts on press freedom.
We've seen that over the last few months. It happened in many countries in sub-Saharan Africa. We are actually very much concerned and even worried, actually, as we noticed that there is kind of a snowball effect in this matter. It's as if countries in Central or East or Southern Africa were involved in a race to restrict access to internet in general and social media in particular.
Where do you see the most worrying situations right now?
Well, Uganda recently became the first country in the African continent to create a daily tax on social media and online messaging services. And journalists and citizen journalists are actually very much affected by it, as they very often use Facebook to post articles or WhatsApp to communicate with their sources. So it's a really a serious blow to freedom of information. But definitely I would say that in sub-Saharan Africa, Tanzania is heading down the wrong path. Ever since President Magufuli took office back in 2015, press freedom has civilly declined. At first, it was journalists being threatened. It was media being suspended. But now the authorities are civilly restricting information from being spread on the internet. All the websites and bloggers are expected to pay very expensive license and fees to be allowed to publish online information according to a recent online regulation law. So this raises serious issues about how people are going to get the information. Many blogs and websites are already struggling with this new law. It's a clear attempt to silence critical voices and critical information.
So where do you see this situation headed?
Actually, sometimes things can work out. Legal actions can be taken and protests are led in the streets. And Cameroon is now the first state ever in Africa to be brought before its own constitutional court for an internet blackout. Sometimes just by denouncing, alerting, raising public awareness is sufficient in order to impose the government to step down.
Given Russia's purported use of social media to affect the U.S. elections, are some controls justified?
Well, as Reporters Without Borders, we do not consider that control is the relevant means of action. Does anyone seriously think that when Ugandan President Museveni said gossip should be pulled on social media and when his government implements a tax to reach that goal, that will prevent the gossips from happening? No, it won't. So what we need most is not to restrict access or create a tax or any financial barrier to access internet or social media. What we need is to strengthen trust in journalism.
Do you think that President Trump's attacks on unfriendly media have affected the situation at all?
Any hate speech against journalists and media have serious impact. It can lead to violence, it can unleash violence, because the line separating verbal violence from physical violence is dissolving somehow. Trump has referred to reporters as the enemies of the people. The expression was from Stalin himself. He's calling critical media fake news and use media bashing as part of his communication. So it is no coincidence that this violent anti-press rhetoric has been coupled with an increase in the number of press freedom violations in the United States. Reporters are more frequently being assaulted.
That was Arnaud Froger, head of the Africa desk at Reporters Without Borders, speaking with Paul Alexander. Amnesty International Zimbabwe has released a human rights manifesto, which they will use to monitor the performance of office holders after the national elections. Amnesty staff hopes candidates running in the election will commit to upholding human rights while in office. Reporter Kudzai Zvinavashi has details.
Muleya Mwananyanda, Amnesty International's Deputy Regional Director, says the manifesto calls on members of the new government to look at human rights issues more critically.
We are calling on the government to abolish the death penalty. The manifesto is also calling on issues around freedoms of expression, association, and assembly. This is a critical issue for Amnesty International because over the years we've documented repression of journalists in this country.
She says that Amnesty has documented the government's past repression of political parties and individuals critical of those in power. Under former ruler Robert Mugabe, Zimbabwe had a long history of human rights abuses. The military ousted him last year after 37 years in power. The July 30th election is the first in the country without him. The manifesto calls for the licensing of community radio stations and an end of impunity by the security forces in carrying out their duties. Mwananyanda says there are documented cases of security forces using excessive violence without reprimand from their superiors. Thursday, Amnesty presented the manifesto to political party representatives, hoping to get candidates to commit to uphold human rights.
This is the manifesto that we would like to use to remind the government of the obvious obligations. These are issues that we've raised over the years as Amnesty International. So we want them to adopt this manifesto as if it were their own.
She says, just like the popular mantra that Zimbabwe is open for business, it should also be open for human rights. A key recommendation calls on the government to form an independent commission of inquiry to look into the disappearance of Itai Dzamara, a government critic who disappeared 3 years ago, as well as the abductions and murders of others. Amnesty also recommends that Zimbabwe signs the protocol to the African Court of Justice, so that Zimbabweans not satisfied with the local justice system can seek a hearing with the African Court. The manifesto is not the first of its kind. Similar ones have been implemented in Lesotho and Angola. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
Cameroon says the purported video of its military executing 5 suspected suicide bombers and 3 of their infant children that has sparked widespread criticism and condemnation is part of a negative campaign by opponents of its military. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Issa Chiroma, Cameroon's communication minister and government spokesperson, says the Central African State's military has remained professional as it fights the Boko Haram insurgency on its northern border with Nigeria, armed gangs from the neighboring Central African Republic attacking its eastern border, and the war with separatist groups who want an English-speaking state.
The combat uniforms used by the Cameroonian army in such circumstances are standard combat suit, namely heavy helmet, bulletproof vest, and ranger's boots. This is obviously not the case in the video. The weapon displayed by the alleged soldiers presented in the video are not those used by the Cameroonian army in this area of operation.
The video that has been making the rounds on social media platforms has shocking images of men dressed in Cameroon military outfits brutally executing women and their babies, with some mothers watching helplessly. In the video, one of the uniformed men says in the French language that they don't like executing people, but that they do not have any option. Issa Chiroma says the intention of the people who fabricated the video was to destroy the image of the Cameroon military and derail it from protecting the country's territorial integrity. Chiroma said President Paul Biya had personally ordered investigations to find the producers of the video. Last year, rights group Amnesty International in a report, stated that the Cameroon military brutally tortures Boko Haram suspects and that many people suspected to have links with Boko Haram have been held incommunicado and tortured in illegal detention facilities run by the military or its secret services. Another report published by Amnesty this year criticizes both the Cameroon military and armed separatists fighting for the independence of the English-speaking regions of Cameroon for using unnecessary and excessive force. Amnesty said Cameroon's military has been responding with arbitrary arrest, torture, unlawful killings, and destruction of property. The Cameroon military has been fighting wars on several fronts for the past 5 years. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The UN Migration Agency reports a steep decline in the number of migrants and asylum seekers making the perilous sea journey across the Mediterranean into Europe this year. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the agency's headquarters in Geneva.
So far this year, the International Organization for Migration reports more than 47,600 migrants and asylum seekers have entered Europe by sea. This is fewer than half the number that arrived over the same period last year and less than one-fifth the number of arrivals over the same time frame in 2016. IOM notes the number of deaths at sea over the past 6 months also has declined, though it has been climbing recently. IOM spokesman Joel Millman says 493 people have been confirmed missing or dead over the last 3 weeks, indicating how treacherous the Mediterranean crossing can be.
And that accounts for about a third of all the deaths in the region this year, which now are approaching 1,500. We had months in the last 4 years, I count eight of them, we were averaging close to 1,000 deaths a month. So 493 in 3 weeks is certainly important, but nonetheless, it's a far cry from when shipwrecks were being reported almost daily, which was a few years ago.
Millman says the number of migrant arrivals in Italy is slowing significantly. He says new figures show Spain is on the verge of becoming the busiest passageway from Africa into Europe. He says roughly 200 people a day are entering Spain irregularly from North Africa, with a heightened number of deaths and missing on that route. The UN Migration Agency says the hysteria surrounding the so-called migration crisis in Europe is blown out of proportion. It says numbers do not lie, and the numbers indicate Europe is going through a political crisis and not a migrant crisis. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We'll leave you with the song Skin Tight by Mr. Easy featuring Ifya.
It's your boy Easy. Yeah. If you give your heart to me, I no go let you go. Where I no go do you, basa basa, baby, trust in me. When you give your heart to me, I no go let you go. Where I no go do you, basa basa, baby, trust in me. I go do your body like skin tight. Where I go do by your side. 10 times when I no get to sneak out. You did by my side. So make a day your body like skin tight. We are going to buy your side. Cause 10 times when I know get to sneak up. You did by my side. Oh, na, 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 na. Yeah, my baby. Ooh, sweet you. Yeah, my lady. Thank you.
We've been listening to Mr. Easy featuring Ifya with the song Skin Tight. I'm Ayen Dengbior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
We are not gonna do you wrong, no. Baby, trust in me. And I'm gonna do your body like skin tight. We are gonna be by your side. 10 times when I need.